Sir Harvey's interpretation is radically unexpected. Dominant babblers assert their dominance by feeding subordinates. To use the sort of anthropomorphic language Sir Harvey delights in, the dominant bird is saying the equivalent of, "Look how superior I am to you. I can afford to give you food." Or, "Look how superior I am. I can afford to make myself vulnerable to hawks by sitting on a high branch acting as a sentinel to warn the rest of the flock feeding on the ground." The observations of Sir Harvey and his colleagues suggest that babblers actively compete for the dangerous role of sentinel. And when a subordinate babbler attempts to offer food to a dominant individual, the apparent generosity is violently rebuffed. The essence of Sir Harvey's idea is that advertisements of superiority are authenticated by their cost. Only a genuinely superior individual can afford to advertise the fact by means of a costly gift. Individuals buy success, for example in attracting mates, through costly demonstrations of superiority, including ostentatious generosity and public-spirited risk-taking. We now have four good Darwinian reasons for individuals to be altruistic, generous, or moral towards each other. First, there is the special case of genetic kinship. Second, there is reciprocation, the repayment of favours given and the giving of favours in anticipation of payback. Following on from this, there is, third, the Darwinian benefit of acquiring a reputation for generosity and kindness. And fourth, if Sir Harvey is right, there is the particular additional benefit of conspicuous generosity as a way of buying unfakeably authentic advertising. Through most of our prehistory, humans lived under conditions that would have strongly favoured the evolution of all four kinds of altruism. We lived in villages, or earlier in discrete roving bands like baboons, partially isolated from neighbouring bands or villages. Most of your fellow band members would have been kin, more closely related to you than members of other bands. Plenty of opportunities for kin altruism to evolve. And whether kin or not, you would tend to meet the same individuals again and again throughout your life. Ideal conditions for the evolution of reciprocal altruism. Those are also the ideal conditions for building a reputation for altruism, and the very same ideal conditions for advertising conspicuous generosity. By any or all of the four routes, genetic tendencies towards altruism would have been favoured in early humans. It is easy to see why our prehistoric ancestors would have been good to their own in-group, but bad, to the point of xenophobia, towards other groups. But why, now that most of us live in big cities where we are no longer surrounded by kin, and where every day we meet individuals whom we are never going to meet again, why are we still so good to each other? Even sometimes to others who might be thought to belong to an out-group.
It is important not to misstate the reach of natural selection. Selection does not favour the evolution of a cognitive awareness of what is good for your genes. That awareness had to wait for the 20th century to reach a cognitive level, and even now full understanding is confined to a minority of scientific specialists. What natural selection favours is rules of thumb, which work in practice to promote the genes that built them. Rules of thumb, by their nature, sometimes misfire. In a bird's brain, the rule, "Look after small squawking things in your nest and drop food into their red gapes," typically has the effect of preserving the genes that built the rule, because the squawking, gaping objects in an adult bird's nest are normally its own offspring. The rule misfires if another baby bird somehow gets into the nest, a circumstance that is positively engineered by cuckoos.